This is the last act of the mystery play. This is the night we find out who walked away with the top honors. And if you have any fan blood in your veins, it's pounding hard.
I just want you to know this is the 27th Annual Academy Award.
Now for someone to read the Best Actress nominations.
I want to say thank you to everybody. I'm truly, truly grateful.
I don't really know how to express my gratitude. I guess all I can do is say thank you.
Academy of Motion Picture Arts and Science, fellow members of the motion picture industry, and honored guests. This is one of the happiest moments of my life.
It's ticklish business any way you look at it. Come on, we'll stick together.
Everybody, and welcome to Ticklish Business, the podcast where we honor and deconstruct the world of classic cinema. As always, I'm Kristen Lopez.
I'm Drea Clark.
And I'm Samantha Ellis.
And it is Oscar week, which means if you are like Drea and I living in Los Angeles, the entire city is in a state of alert.
Yes. Well, it's very funny. This city likes to shut down from like November through February in the service of awards season, like it's a actual season anywhere else. But yeah, the funniest part about being here, I live about 10 minutes from the now Dolby Theater, that it becomes a literal pain on Oscar day to get around, which is the reality of living like so close to something that seems almost fairy tale-ness, is that you're like, I need to go to the grocery store. And stupid Vine is backed up.
My brother works right near where they do the Oscars at Hollywood and Highland. And so I've been reminding my mother and my brother, plan time for you to get to work, because right around Wednesday, Thursday, that street's going to be closed off entirely and you're not going to be able to access it.
Yeah.
Wow. I'm really not excited. I'm intense to see how this year's Oscars will be with everything going on. It'll be very interesting to see who shows up.
Oh, everyone will show up. They don't care. They all want the press. And you're right, because it is interesting. The Academy has been mucking with things so much. I work production for the Golden Globes, so I've been part of awards shaping. And awards are annoying because each award takes a huge amount of time. You have to do the intro for the presenter, then the presenter banter, which is 8 times out of 10 just awkward. And then you say the winner, and then the winner has to get to stage, and then the winner talks. And most of the time the winner talks too long, and then they exit. So like, it's the time that goes into it from the production standpoint. I can be like, yeah, just get to the good stuff, get to them on stage. But they've done all of their rollouts so clumsily of not handling this information well. And they're also delusional about why they're doing it. The Oscars will never have the permeated ratings that they used to have. There's no such thing really as that pervasive water cooler entertainment anymore. People have 1,000 channels to watch. And also kids, teenagers, young adults, whatever, it's not like you can only see the stars you like if they show up at a talk show or a late night show or the Oscars, which is why people used to tune in, and which is why they're like, oh, let's do a best popular film category. No younger kids are going to watch the Oscars because Lady Gaga might be there, because they can watch Lady Gaga on their phone anytime they want, probably directly from her Insta stories. So yeah, they've been doing a lot of mucking. I don't think the show will change at all. And I also don't think talent will do anything about it now that it's been remedied. It would have been interesting if they'd actually kept the, like, strange cinematography, editing, acting, and makeup subcategories if they'd revolted. But they want the airtime. They all want the airtime.
This Academy Awards season has been fraught. I'm ready for it to end, personally. I'm ready to forget that certain movies exist. Which shall remain nameless, but I'm ready.
We know. We all know, Kristen.
A certain movie about a big tooth rock star. I'm ready for that movie to just never, ever grace my path again. It's been hilarious watching history repeat itself, because I've actually read books about the history of the Oscars, and they were chasing ratings since it's been televised in the 50s.
Of course, yeah.
This is not anything new, yet they keep falling back on things that they believe are going to make them a ratings juggernaut. And my issue is look at the Super Bowl. Super Bowl never gets big ratings. It gets good ratings, but it is not the single most important thing to ever grace our televisions anymore. That doesn't mean that we cancel the Super Bowl, that we're not going to show it the next year. And that's how I feel we should be with the Oscars. They're not going to do them. They could change the networks, but they will still be on. So at this point, I kind of wish the Academy would, I'm going to say it bluntly, grow some balls and just be like, hey, ABC, you're mad that your movies aren't nominated? Well, that's fine. We can go to Netflix and they'll let us do however long we want, however many categories. We can curse. We can do whatever we want. So if you don't like it, somebody else will take it. And honestly, they probably should consider alternative options, because if they're so concerned with getting the youth, the kids, quote unquote, to watch this, they need to go to where those people are, which a lot of them don't have cable anymore. I maintain if they stream the Oscars, there would be a lot less issue.
They are. Ironically, part of their solution of those four categories was, or part of their explanation was, because they're streaming it, you could see the full thing in its entirety if you were watching it online. But again, their rollout, it's like people who've never done a press release in their life.
It's a big fat mess, and they really need to figure something out. I'm pretty sure Academy President John Bailey's out of a job after this year. It's been very interesting watching everything unfold, because it's akin to watching your granddad try to figure out how to work a scanner and just not understanding. Or like trying to watch your grandpa go on Twitter because he thinks that that would make him cool, but not understanding how a hashtag works. And then he just says, well, hashtags are stupid. We should just do away with them. But nobody really listens to what he has to say. So that's my analogy for the entire Academy. They are your old grandpa trying to learn new technology.
I'll take it.
Me too. I think my issue with the Oscars as it stands right now is, back in the days of classic cinema, old Hollywood, I feel like there was no divide between the films that the audience considers good and the films that the Academy considers good and worthy of a nomination. It's become such a huge divide. It turns into, you have all these movies throughout the 11 months of the year that everybody's watching and enjoying. And then in December, all of these movies start popping out that you've never heard of that are so highbrow and get all of this Oscar buzz. Those are the only ones that get nominations.
They are about merit. But they're also about what campaigns well, what sells itself.
But the public, I don't think, is getting on board with the way that the Oscar nominations are going, especially for Best Picture lately, because I genuinely don't even watch many modern movies anymore, just because I feel like the first 11 months of the year are sort of worthless. It's like, well, I can watch this movie. Like, for instance, the one that comes to my mind is The Great Gatsby. That was a perfect example of one. If it was released in December, it probably would have swept the Oscars.
I don't think they had a shot. That's why they didn't release it in December. Not because I don't like that movie, but because the Oscars is also, to what you're saying, become synonymous with a very specific kind of movie that they like to reward.
That's very true. That's how I feel, how it is today.
There's literally thousands more movies made a year. So yes, that divide between what they're crediting, which, like I said, I think is a pretty rigid criteria of like, oh, it's a good movie, but it doesn't seem like an Oscar movie, which I think is nonsense.
If you look at the 30s, 40s, 50s, if you look at the 10 top box office grossing films of the year, those were the ones that would also get Oscar nominations. That is definitely not the case anymore.
And it's also frustrating because there's been a lot of complaints that, looking at the Best Picture nominees this year, that this was a weak year for movies. And if you're only looking at those nominees, I would agree. But this was an incredible year for movies. I'm also biased because I see a lot of stuff at festivals, which I know Kristen does as well. So there's a different standard in terms of new talent that's coming out, or new films that blew my mind, new techniques, new narratives. It was a great year for film, and it's just not reflected anymore by the Academy.
I was saying that there were so many great movies, none of which were recognized. Go back to what Samantha was saying. I mean, at this point, most people know the further into December your movie is released, the greater the odds you won't get nominated or that you won't win. So it's usually like they cut off the first week of December before everybody goes away for Christmas. And the problem is platform releasing like they used to do in the 70s, 80s, the New York and LA Oscar qualifying run and the slow rollout, that doesn't hold the same weight anymore as it did 30 years ago, because we have streaming, we have video on demand, people want the movies instantly. And they've been talking for years about abolishing the whole Oscar qualifying limited release type of deal, because people just get so inundated with movies during the holidays that they don't end up going to see them because there's just so many. It's a convoluted issue. And again, the Academy is very set in their ways. When was the last time they made a major change? At least 10 years?
Right. I'd say in the 90s, animated films.
They changed the Best Picture nominees to the fluctuating.
Oh, that's true. 2008.
5 to 10. So it's been 10 years at least since they've actually looked at the show itself and what gets nominated. And they really need to, because with the continued cries of the lack of diversity in the nominees, I think it's about time somebody just really overhauled the Oscars.
Absolutely. Something that really interested me in the Twitter feed when they announced that they were going back and presenting all 24 Oscars, so many of the comments almost had nothing to do with a response to that. It was, you should make a stunt Oscar. You should make a voice acting Oscar. I think they should really make an animal acting Oscar. I think that would be really great. But there are so many other really important aspects of cinema that aren't even being looked at too. I'm, of course, the biggest campaigner for posthumous honorary Oscars too.
The casting community has rightfully been pushing for a casting Oscar for years, which...
That is so true.
I mean, a lot of the additional ones would make sense to me, but casting not only is so crucial, and people don't understand how removed that process often is from the director or even the producers at the initial stages, but also because of that, a lot of casting directors who will bring in people who either are doing a total new angle that you've never seen them perform in, like comedians doing something dramatic, or an absolute newcomer, and then they'll never get any credit for that, and that will make a movie. And that person could get a nominee. So yeah, I think casting's a great element of that. That's why, and I think we're all in agreement about it, that if the Academy does an overhaul, they should look at, well, who still actually holds any value or thinks that the Academy Awards hold value? And it's people like us, and the things we're interested in are actually seeing merit and artistry reflected in the nominees and the winners, and that people who work in this craft we love being highlighted. And so adding awards would add more time to a show. So then, yeah, figure out what that show is. Do I care about 50 montages? I do not.
There's a lot of filler they could cut out and add more awards.
I maintain I wish they would bring back the Academy nomination for best use of music in film, not score. I don't remember when they stopped doing it, but it was best essentially modern music or something that had been repurposed for film.
Like the music supervisor.
I think it was like best adapted music or something. I would love for them to do that. They need to really get with the times. So we're talking more about the Academy's failures in this week's episode. We are doing our top three Oscar snubs that still sting. This is a pretty open-ended top three. It's any Oscar snub that we feel strongly about. So it can be somebody who didn't win an award. It can be somebody who was never nominated for an award. It's pretty fluid. We're just going to talk about the nominations that still make us mad that they didn't come to pass. Mine was tough. I'm glad we have honorable mentions, because the two that I think most people would assume I would put on this list are not here, which I think is good, because who wants to hear me talk about them again? But I'll talk about them when we do the honorable mentions.
You're mixing it up.
I am. I'm trying to blend things together. My number three is actually, a Best Picture snub. I'm just going to get that one out of the way. And it comes to us from 1936. If you don't know what the nominees were for Best Picture that year, it was Anthony Adverse, Dodsworth, Mr. Deeds Goes to Town, Romeo and Juliet, San Francisco, The Story of Louis Pasteur, A Tale of Two Cities, Three Smart Girls, and my nomination, Libel Lady. Does anybody know what won that year in 1936?
Oh, man.
Not off the top of my head.
It's another William Powell movie that was released that year. It's The Great.
If you had mentioned it, I would have known.
That one in 1936, and I believe they awarded the wrong William Powell movie.
That's fair.
I'm assuming that they just said, which is the William Powell movie? And somebody said Ziegfeld, and they were like, great. They didn't even bother to, you know, look. I think it might be the Marissa Tomei mistake Oscar of the year.
Burn!
I was going to say, that was there was no mistake.
I have not seen My Cousin Vinny, so I can't tell you if I agree with that one or not.
I have seen so few modern films. That's one of the ones I actually do like. And I think she deserved it. But go on. I'd love to hear this.
Libel Lady is a genius, genius movie. One of the best screwball comedies to ever come down the pike. I don't know how anybody can watch it and not look at William Powell and Jean Harlow, or even William Powell and Myrna Loy, and think that that's not as good of a movie as The Great Ziegfeld. Now, full disclosure, I have not seen The Great Ziegfeld, but I do find that a lot of Hollywood biopics of the classic era really don't jive with me, because there's a fair bit of ersatz sentiment, I think is what I'm going for. You know, the glorification. I mean, it makes sense. It was also William Powell and Myrna Loy. Louise Reiner's in there, who was not infamously multiple Academy winner. I just don't feel that it's got to be any better than Libel Lady. I don't. It can't be any better than Ziegfeld Girl from 1941. That movie's also delightfully entertaining. Or 1946's Ziegfeld Follies, which I haven't seen, but I've seen clips of it, and it also looks better. So I think the wrong Ziegfeld movie won. I think it should have been Libel Lady. I will always think that. Drea, what's your number three?
Mine is also a Best Picture snub, although it was nominated, and it's probably what comes to a lot of people's mind when they think, what the hell, Academy? And it's a little motion picture that you may or may not heard of called Citizen Kane. It not only did not win Best Picture, it also lost director and cinematography and editing. It only won screenplay, which is bonkers to me. Again, I'm not sure if you guys have heard of this film, because so few people have seen the merits of it. And it lost to John Ford's How Green Was My Valley, which I'm sure we can all agree is truly an American treasure, talked about regularly to this day. I'm lying because I hate How Green Was My Valley only because it denied Citizen Kane.
I've never heard of this movie. Did the director ever go off and do anything else after this?
You know, it's funny because I'm into super obscure films, so I get why you wouldn't have heard of Citizen Kane. Poor Orson Welles, man. So this was in 1942. The only other film that I would have maybe been like, okay, it was also up against The Maltese Falcon, which I hold a real soft spot for, but also Suspicion and Little Foxes, good films. People, like, the Academy is made up of artists. There are different guilds. They have different things. The idea that anyone could have watched Citizen Kane and not been like, oh my God, this film is doing something that is both revolutionary and fully accessible. Like, it is beautiful, detailed filmmaking from beginning to end. And you guys, it lost to How Green Was My Valley. I don't know if I'm interjecting enough. Ugh. Is that coming across? Are you getting that?
I've had so many people recommend that movie to me, and I have not watched it, mostly because it's John Ford, correct?
Yes.
John Ford and I seem to be at odds, because I almost put George Cukor on my list, who John Ford won the Oscar, I feel should be George Cukor's for The Grapes of Wrath. But I didn't put that on my list because I didn't want people calling me a dirty communist for not loving an American classic like The Grapes of Wrath. But John Ford movies and I just do not jive together. And so every time somebody tells me to watch How Green Was My Valley, I'm like, yeah, I'll get to it.
I watched it out of spite. I watched it and it was like, prove me wrong, How Green Was My Valley. And again, I'm never going to begrudge a... Well, no, this is a lie. I probably, there are films out there I will begrudge for existing, but How Green Was My Valley is not one of them. Like, it has good intentions. There is artistry to it. But Citizen Kane, like I said, was revolutionary. And then it's not just, Best Picture's tricky because people in every category in the Academy vote for that. Especially, like, the actors have, it's the biggest guild, so they get the most votes. So oftentimes that can influence the Best Picture. But the fact, like, that Orson Welles lost Best Director and that the cinematography, I mean, like, there are things in this movie on a technical level beyond just emotional and storytelling-wise that I also think it's excelling at. I really wonder, what were they smoking in 1942?
I think the biggest snub was the cinematography. I think that's one of the best shot films ever.
It taught an entire generation to think of film beyond how you would just like film a play. It does things with composition
exactly. And
framing that advance the entire medium. Well, if we could time travel, I hope we could start a whisper campaign and sway things.
Work our way into the Academy somehow.
Trying to find out what bested Greg Toland for cinematography that year. Does anybody know?
Not off the top of my head, but whoever it was a travesty.
It was Arthur Miller for the film. Say it with me now. Oh, How Green God. Was My Valley?
I
don't even know
why. I think that's why I refused to answer that question, because I kind of maybe knew.
I haven't seen How Green Was My Valley, but I have to admit, I do really want to, for this reason and because Maureen O'Hara is so gorgeous in it from what I've seen. But it does look boring, so that's why I haven't seen it.
But it is an interesting thing, too, the idea of what we're allowed from this historical vantage point. This many years later, it is that other thing of when we're looking at Oscar winners, be it the films, be it the actors, it's who actually did stand the test of time, which of these performances and films, because I think if you held up that list to anybody and didn't tell them who the winners were, everyone would assume it was Citizen.
Absolutely, without a doubt.
Sam, I yield the floor to whatever energy you have that may or may not be in the same righteous anger zone as mine.
I love your word choice. You're yielding the floor to me because all of my choices are actors, by the way. This is all acting categories. My number three choice is James Stewart for Mr. Smith Goes to Washington.
Lovely.
Of course, it's pretty moot to go over any of the could have beens for the undisputed greatest year in cinema, but the best actor race was next to impossible. I mean, he was up against Clark Gable for Gone with the Wind, Laurence Olivier for Wuthering Heights, and he was ultimately beaten out by Robert Donat for Goodbye, Mr. Chips.
Not to interrupt your love fest for Jimmy Stewart, but I would have that as an honorable mention on my list. Purely because, I'm sorry to Jimmy Stewart, but like, Larry should have won. Larry should have won.
No!
Yes!
No.
Forever. How dare you?
No, I am so passionate about Jimmy Stewart's performance in this. He literally ran himself ragged. He devoided himself of sleep. He gargled chemicals to make his voice hoarse for the climactic scene in the Senate. And I feel like the pity Oscar that he got the next year for The Philadelphia Story just wasn't enough for what he put himself through and how marvelous he was on screen. I don't exaggerate when I say that it's my favorite singular acting performance ever.
That doesn't sound as committed as eating a deer liver or whatever Leo did to get that Oscar for The Revenant.
It's not, but he also met that method with pure acting talent.
These are also choices that the mentally ill make, so let's concentrate on the performances versus just weird stunts.
I maintain Jimmy Stewart is good, but he's not impeccably swoon-worthy like Larry Olivier is in Wuthering Heights. He's just not.
I beg to differ. I think Jimmy Stewart was one of the most underrated actors as far as romance goes. This isn't the movie that shows that off. Come Live With Me with Hedy Lamarr is my personal favorite as far as that goes. But I think this is his best acting performance, and I think it's the best acting performance. I also haven't seen Goodbye, Mr. Chips, but it's one of those things where I just don't care to. I don't think that there's any way that it could have been as good. And I don't think Clark Gable deserved it for Gone with the Wind. I'm going to be that person. I'm going to get a lot of flack for this, but all of the other actors need to be pushed aside for this singular performance.
Hold your ground, lady.
I'm holding my ground. I am passionate about this one. I'm very much so.
Justice for Larry. That's all I can tell you.
Team Jimmy. This is going to become the Betty and Joan, the new Betty and Joan. Team Jimmy or Team Larry. I love Laurence Olivier, though. He got his fair share of Oscars.
But none for being Heathcliff.
That's true.
Yeah, that doesn't count.
But Jimmy didn't get his for being Jefferson Smith either. All the Oscars for 1939. Just give everybody Oscars who made any movies.
You do know at some point we will have to address 1939 turning 80?
I think it's 80.
Where have I been?
Not in math class.
We're going to have to talk about 1939 at some point. We wouldn't be a classic film podcast doing our due diligence if we didn't talk about 1939 in some way. So stay tuned for that. I'm going to segue to my number two, which is a cinematography snub. I know cinematography is not sexy. It's not Larry Olivier in a cool coat trying to romance a obviously stupid Merle Oberon. We like color. We like what black and white does. We like the way the camera placement makes us feel emotion. So I wanted to honor someone who should have gotten an Academy Award for something and didn't. And it's not Leon Chamroy. I love Leon Chamroy. I actually tried to think about some times he didn't win, and I couldn't do it. So I'm going with a movie from 1944. In Best Cinematography that year, the nominees were Cover Girl, Home in Indiana, Kismet, Lady in the Dark, and Meet Me in St. Louis. Do you know what won cinematography in 1944?
I'm already upset.
Chamroy.
What?
He won for Wilson. Anybody remember Wilson? Exactly my point. Nobody remembers Wilson. It's a movie about that fine 28th American president, Woodrow Wilson.
Yeah, what were you saying about not being sexy?
I'm fanning myself over here.
I just cannot understand how George J. Folsey's cinematography for Meet Me in St. Louis did not win. Because Meet Me in St. Louis is a beautifully, beautifully filmed movie. The point of the movie is to show us the beauty of this time gone by. And it is utterly spectacular. Judy Garland herself said that she never looked more beautiful than when she made this movie. And I believe that. Judy Garland was an actress, unfortunately, that nobody knew what to do with. Cinematography and costuming were never her friend. But George Folsey knows exactly how to light her, how to put her in frame. She is just exquisite in this movie. Soft lighting, everything looks very gauzy. I mean, it is utterly, utterly spellbinding. And George Folsey did do several movies. I mean, he did the cinematography on 1936's Best Picture, The Great Ziegfeld. He did a lot of Judy Garland movies, The Clock and the Harvey Girls, which also has some great color cinematography. He did Green Dolphin Street. He would do some black and white stuff with Adam's Rib, the Lana Turner movie, A Life of Her Own, Million Dollar Mermaid, Seven Brides for Seven Brothers. He deserved it. I've never seen Wilson. I'm sure Leon Chamroy, he's always beautiful. I mean, his work is great, but I can't see a biopic about Woodrow Wilson being anything else other than content. They just decided to reward it for everything. And keep in mind, Leon Chamroy won an Oscar the next year. So he won two times in a row for Wilson and Leave Her to Heaven, which Leave Her to Heaven, rightfully so.
Absolutely.
I can't understand how someone could look at Meet Me in St. Louis and say that the cinematography was not as good.
So here's my two cents on that. I think out of the movies that you listed, I think undoubtedly, Meet Me in St. Louis. I completely agree with you. But if they took the turn that they did a few years later and did the color and then a black and white, my choice would be Laura. I'm amazed that Laura wasn't even nominated.
Laura won for black and white.
I thought you were saying Wilson was...
Yeah, for color cinematography.
Oh, my bad. I didn't realize that it had been split by that point. I was going to say, if there is no nomination for Laura, I would have been...
Oh, you know, no.
That would have been going on my list.
Yeah, definitely was covered.
But yeah, Mimi in St. Louis, for sure.
I can even understand people that say Cover Girl. Or even Lady in the Dark. Lady in the Dark is a weird-ass movie, but it's beautiful to look at. I can understand any of those. Wilson, I will never understand. Ever. I want to say that Wilson, Drea and I brought up Wilson when we did a movie that was nominated that same year. I want to say we made fun of it then.
We do have a long history of making fun of Wilson.
We might need to do at some point, maybe on Patreon or something, actually watch Wilson and see if we've been mean to it unfairly. I don't know. Drea, what's your next one?
Well, my next one is a director. And again, I feel like my choices are less esoteric and more, are you kidding me? Like, if you asked the average modern moviegoer, who are the people and what were the films that were the sort of mind blowers of their time and that reinvented the genre, the person I have, you guys, Alfred Hitchcock never won an Academy Award.
I was just talking about this to somebody the other day, so.
That is bonkers. He got an honorary award. I don't mean to do this deep dive, and maybe you guys have never heard of him. Maybe he's one of those arty obscure directors that only me and a small faction of people are privy to. You can look him up if you haven't heard of him. The Academy clearly hadn't heard enough of him.
Who?
Yeah. Good. Well timed. But it's crazy to me. And there's several instances that I would argue. I would argue it for Psycho in what it did for twist and narrative structure. But also one of the things in general, I think, of why he wasn't ever properly awarded, even when he was nominated, is because I think his films, their magic element is in a lot of their genre specificity, that they're thrillers, that there's suspense, there's horror tendencies. And I think the Academy at large, now for decades and decades, have shied away from that. Psycho lost to Billy Wilder's The Apartment, and I have such affinity to that movie, it is very hard for me to be like, oh, okay, I kind of get that. But the one that I would throw down for in time travel and be like, you should change this, is more controversial than my railing against How Stupid Green Is Your Valley. But I really think Rear Window should have taken it over On the Waterfront. I'm not super partial to crime stuff anyway. And On the Waterfront, like, I'm not going to deny that there's a lot going on there, that positive. But Rear Window, other than having Sam's boyfriend James Stewart in it, Rear Window... Mm-hmm. is one of those films that to this day is taught. It completely established a new style of shooting. There's a whole new tone of it. The idea of suspense in cinema, I mean, you'd seen a lot of that in everything from like the German films of the 20s. You've gotten shades of it before, but Hitchcock elevated it and it started to become a really artistic and significant movement with the work that he was doing. It's insane to me. And then I would tie it's not an official honorable mention, but I would also tie it to the fact that you guys, Bernard Herrmann's score for Psycho did not win. I don't know what? If you're familiar with that Psycho, score, but like he didn't win for Psycho. He didn't win for Vertigo. He didn't win for North by Northwest. Alfred Hitchcock.
A poor man.
No, it's crazy. Psycho! If you asked someone, what's a film score, they would shriek that score at you. It's crazy. Alfred Hitchcock, though, you guys, never won.
I was going to put him on my own list, too. He's definitely an honorable mention for me. I sort of have my trifecta that I think should have won directors that never won directing Oscars. It would be him, Preston Sturges, and Charles Walters.
Oh, Sturges and Walters. Yeah. Good choices. Those two...
He never won for directing. It's insane. He's in my top three favorite directors of all time.
Cukor, too, should have definitely had way more Oscars.
Just give George Cukor all the Oscars. Did you make a movie this year? Here's an Oscar.
Sam, what's your number two?
My number two, it's hard to put my foot down and say this needed to win, nothing else. But if I could go back and hand out some Oscars, I would definitely hand one to Natalie Wood for Splendor in the Grass. There was definitely some competition this year. Also nominated was Audrey Hepburn for Breakfast at Tiffany's. But Sophia Loren made history as the first woman to win the Best Actress Oscar for a foreign film for her incredibly heart-wrenching performance in Two Women. And I adore Sophia. She's one of, if not my favorite, foreign actresses. I think this is the one case where I would never want to take that win from her. But I just wish this could have been a tie, because I think Natalie's the one actress who never won an Oscar that I would give one to. And Splendor in the Grass is by far her finest performance. I feel like she devoted her whole life to highlighting really strong, emotional, and realistic women on screen. And this movie in particular, she just shows so much growth and range in her role. She starts as an idealistic and naive high school student and ends up as a young woman whose dreams and mental health have been broken. And it's just so magnificent. And it's beyond me that she wasn't awarded for any of her films.
I would definitely agree with you on that being a sad loss, because Natalie tried so hard to break out of being a child star and still was never really given her due, even as an adult. It's very upsetting that Sophia Loren bursts out the gate and wins. But it also shows the Academy's penchant that they still do every now and then for taking, you know, one good performance, usually foreign, from a female actress. And we see it this year with Yalitza Aparicio for Roma. It seems very similar. They gravitate towards those dynamic foreign women. You usually get the Oscar that is due them, but it usually comes at the expense of some poor performer who's like had their due, like in this case, at least with Natalie.
I'm one of those people who I don't think that there should have been a tie for Funny Girl in the Land in Winter. I think Barbara Streisand should have had that Oscar alone. But I wish there was a tie. If I could go back in time, steal another Oscar and just give them to both women, I would not do it any year other than this year.
I would get behind that as well.
My number one is actually, much like Natalie Wood, a performer that never got an Academy Award, ever. Nominated 4 times.
I know who you're already going to talk about. Oh my goodness, I'm waiting for this.
Finally got an Oscar in the, I want to say, the late 80s as a Lifetime Career Award, the Pity Oscar. And that was BS, because she should have had at least 3. And that's Barbara Stanwyck.
She was the first person I wrote down when I was coming up with, like, who should be on this list. I'm so happy you're saying this.
Barbara Stanwyck is a gem. I love her so much. She's one of my favorite actresses. I will list her Oscar losses in order of least egregious to most egregious. She was nominated in 1942 for Ball of Fire. She lost to Joan Fontaine in Suspicion.
That's fair.
That's fair. I can get behind that. Then she was nominated in 1949 for Sorry, Wrong Number, which is very odd because that movie is, sorry, not that good. She was bested by Jane Wyman for Johnny Belinda.
I think that was a tough year, if I'm not mistaken. I remember looking at that year when I did my research, but I can't remember why.
I understand why Jane Wyman got it. I can't fault it too much. Then she was nominated in 45 for Double Indemnity. And she lost that year to Ingrid Bergman for Gaslight.
Oh, no.
That's tough.
That's so tough.
That's why I moved along on my list, because I was like, oh, I can't make that argument.
But then her first Oscar nomination was in 1938. She was nominated for Stella Dallas, which if you've watched Stella Dallas and you did not sob over her, I know it's a remake. But she is fantastic. And do you know who she lost to in 1938?
I do, and I know you're going to argue for it, but I feel so bad.
Louise Ryder for The Good Earth. First actress, first performer to win consecutive awards for lead roles. You know what? Louise Ryder, kind of a greedy bitch when it came to Oscars. Okay, she didn't.
I don't know if that's Louise Ryder's fault.
I know it's not Louise Reiner's fault. She's not with us anymore, so I understand. It's not her fault. It's the Academy's fault.
in retrospect, winning back-to-back Oscars, I've actually done research on this. I've written about this in the past because I really do like Louise Reiner. Those back-to-back Oscars consequently ruined her career. So you could argue if Barbara Stanwyck got her due for Stella Dallas, that Louise Reiner would have still been making movies after that. I agree with you in that sense, but I do really like her in The Good Earth. I love that movie. And I know it's terrible. That's a really problematic film, like incredibly problematic. But Louise Reiner is so cute and adorable. And the fact that this nobody came out of nowhere and grabbed 2 Oscars in 2 years, I think is just really cool.
Well, you tell that to Barbara.
I know. Go back. I would take that second Oscar from her, too.
Samantha and I are just at odds lately, I swear.
Always.
Barbara Stanwyck, I maintain she should have at least 2 Academy Awards. I'd have given her more. She's a gem. She got an Oscar in 1982. She got an honorary award, quote, for superlative creativity and her unique contributions to the art of screen acting. Nope, that's not good enough. And she should have at least 2 more nominations for Babyface and The Lady Eve. So I maintain there is an alternate universe somewhere. Barbara Stanwyck got 6 nominations and she won 4.
I'm so with you. I applaud that. Babyface and The Lady Eve especially, like, wow. That kind of turned the light bulb on for me. I was like, wait a minute. Yeah, she should have won for those two.
Drea, what's your number one?
Okay, my number one is a little unusual for me in the sense that I think of myself as very female-centric normally in terms of what I get really passionate about in old history, unless it's thinking about making out with Gregory Peck, which is more male-centric. I truly believe this. It's for someone who not only did not win Best Actor, but he wasn't even nominated, and that is Henry Fonda for 12 Angry Men.
Are you serious?
Oh, yeah. Oh, I'll stand by that.
No, I mean, he wasn't even... that's news to me.
Oh,
I can't
believe. I truly was like, I can't believe you're going against me on Henry Fonda.
No, never. Yeah. I would never go against...
Oh, okay.
I don't know who won, but the fact that he wasn't nominated is a crime, an absolute crime.
It's insane. Well, that's because they needed to make room for, like, Anthony Franciosa in A Hat Full of Rain.
Those method performers.
If it was Don Murray for A Hat Full of Rain, that would be totally different because Don Murray needed an Oscar in his life. Anthony Franciosa, no. Literally.
Anthony Franciosa gets an Oscar because he had to put up with Shelley Winters.
That would be in the small print on the statue. Obviously, Alec Guinness won that year for The Bridge on the River Kwai. Like, Charles Laughton was up for witness for the prosecution, which, fair enough.
Yeah, that's fair.
But if you look at 12 Angry Men, which lost all 3 categories it was in to The Bridge on the River Kwai.
Oh, no.
I know. And 12 Angry Men, it is so close. That movie is so claustrophobic. You are in that room. There is no escaping. The performance is in every fiber of their being. Because they're just sitting there. And Henry Fonda, as he was obviously the juror who was putting a wrench in things, and what he was doing in the small shifts, it's just the kind of performance that it would shock me to not have that win today versus the more epic, showier thing. It's just there is nowhere to hide, and he does so well. And he's also the fulcrum for an ensemble piece. And you can tell that kind of acting, it's great. It is more like watching a play that you can see them elevating each other's performances, which is crucial for something like that when the roles are so intertwined and it's less of a two-hander or a buddy movie or whatever. And the fact he's not nominated is already egregious. I do think he should have won for that. He lost for Grapes of Wrath, which I also think he was doing incredible understated work in. He won a single Oscar for On Golden Pond 40-some years after The Grapes of Wrath.
That breaks my heart. That really does.
And it's interesting because he's also the kind of performer that now we know enough about his real life for me to be like, oh, not a great guy. That movie was formative for me, 12 Angry Men, in terms of what a story and what performances could do to show you something genuine about the human condition. And He was robbed, you guys. Robbed, I say.
He was robbed. I am jumping on that bandwagon and staying there. He was robbed.
Thank you. Plenty of room on this bandwagon.
Samantha, what's your number one?
My number one is a little bit of a fly ball. This is something that I feel not a lot of people know about, but in my opinion, the 1962 Best Actor race was by far the most competitive in film history, and I'm going to tell you why. Specifically, I think Jack Lemmon should have easily won for Days of Wine and Roses, but that year he was up against, listen to this, Peter O'Toole for Lawrence of Arabia, Burt Lancaster for Birdman of Alcatraz, which is considered one of his best, Marcello Mastroianni for Divorce Italian Style, which, again, it's that rare foreign film that he was just fantastic in. And the winner was, ding, 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 Gregory Peck for To Kill a Mockingbird.
Swoon!
Well, here's the thing. You're going to hate me in a minute. I may get a lot of flack for this, but I think Jack Lemmon really deserved this win. I feel like by this point in time, he had completely established a career in comedy, and he was doing absolutely marvelous at it. But that wasn't enough for him. This was his first full foray into drama, and he threatened his whole comedic career by starring in this movie. But he brings so many really important truths about alcoholism to life, and he gives, without a doubt, the finest performance of his career. The movie was shown on TCM towards the beginning of 31 Days of Oscar this month, and another fan tweeted that this movie hurts to watch because the acting is so good, and I really couldn't agree more. The scene of him desperately tearing up the greenhouse shatters my heart, and I would have loved to see Jack get recognition from the Academy and get awarded for putting his reputation on the line for the sake of putting in a good performance.
I love me some Gregory Peck through time and space.
I know, I figured you wouldn't agree with me on this one.
Well, no, but he's a masterful Atticus Finch, but it is that thing. A lot of these performances, it's hard because it's like apples and oranges what they're being asked to do.
Right.
And like you said, addiction is a hard portrayal anyway. Adding to it of what we know of his persona and how this would buck against it, I would say up against those, I would think his is the bigger feat to accomplish.
I'm amazed that you feel that way. That's great to hear. I'm surprised.
Listen, this is why I should be the only person voting for all of the Academy Awards.
I feel like everybody feels that way. I definitely feel that way too sometimes. I don't think I'm overstating it in my own opinion when I say that he was the best actor of all time. He could do comedy. He could do drama. He could do anything incredibly well. He was so realistic. And he was one of those people, if he made a movie, he gets an Oscar, in my opinion. He should have gotten an Oscar for everything he was nominated for.
He was the OG Tom Hanks.
That's fair.
I can't disagree with Samantha's logic. Sounds right. Nicer than someone that does love both movies relatively equally.
It's insane to me how competitive it was that year. Lawrence of Arabia, if you told someone without telling them any of the other nominees that Peter O'Toole did not win for Lawrence of Arabia, I think they would look at you like you were stupid.
I can't say anything about Lawrence of Arabia because I haven't seen it.
I haven't either, but I know that it's the performance of a lifetime for Peter O'Toole. I think that's pretty indisputable.
It's just very long.
Right. And even Omar Sharif doesn't reel me in just yet for that one. I'm definitely going to see it, but I don't know when.
Which is funny because we've heard you talk about him in Funny Girl. So
that's what I'm saying. I love Omar Sharif, and he was nominated for an Oscar for that one. But
it's just so long. Yeah,
exactly. It just seems like it's just going to be desert. Here's some desert. Hey, do you want some desert?
sand, and hey, over there you'll see sand. Moving on to some honorable mentions. I only have a couple. Marilyn Monroe, never nominated for an Academy Award.
It's insane. You could have a whole subset of the amazing blondes who were never nominated.
Never nominated. Won a Golden Globe. It was essentially just a popularity award. She got World Film Favorite Female. She was only nominated for a Globe twice for Bus Stop and Some Like It Hot. I believe she should have at least two Oscars, Some Like It Hot and Don't Bother to Knock. And then, of course, you knew I was going to put him on here somewhere. John Garfield, nominated twice, never won an Oscar in his life, which is such BS. He was nominated in 1939 for Four Daughters and in 1948 for Body and Soul. And in 48, he should have won with a bullet because you know who won in 1948?
Who?
It was Ronald Coleman for A Double Life. No one remembers that. Who remembers that? Gregory Peck could have won that. He was nominated that year for Gentleman's Agreement. Like, that I could understand.
Me too, for sure.
Justice for Peck! Justice for Peck!
And then John Garfield was nominated in Supporting Actor for Four Daughters, his first film. And you know who won there? No one does! It was Walter Brennan for a movie called Kentucky.
No! We've talked about how amazing Four Daughters is. We've talked about how great he is. He should have won by a landslide.
Not to disparage Kentucky, which stars Academy Award winner Walter Brennan, described on IMDb as, quote, Romeo and Juliet love story amidst horse racing in Kentucky.
I hate it. I don't know it, but I hate it.
So those are my honorable mentions. Samantha, what were some honorable mentions you had?
This was probably the hardest list I've had to make for this podcast. I have three. I'm going to try to breeze through them really quickly. Norma Shearer for Marie Antoinette. That was a really tough year. I'm notoriously anti-Bette Davis. I'm coming out as a hater. So any Oscar that could have been taken from her is considered a win in my book. But Norma Shearer turned in the performance of her life. Must have been so hard to tackle such an iconic historical figure. She not only did that, she made her really sympathetic. I would also say Montgomery Clift for The Search. This is one that I'm not too picky about. I just think that Montgomery Clift should have won an Oscar. The Search is my personal favorite. Like Natalie Wood, he turned in great raw performances, one right after another. He could have won for A Place in the Sun, From Here to Eternity, The Misfits, countless others. My last one is Anne Blythe for Mildred Pierce for Best Supporting Actress. It was a pretty tough competition. Not only was Anne up against Eve Arden for her performance as Ida, which is almost a death sentence to have more than one actor up for the same Oscar for the same film, but she also had to contend with Angela Lansbury for her really standout role in The Picture of Dorian Gray. But guess who won that one? Anne Revere for National Velvet. I haven't seen it, so I can't argue against it, but Anne's performance is really remarkable for her age and for the time period and is still really remembered today as one of the greatest femme fatales in noir.
You know that I had this as an honorable mention. I was going to wait till you brought it up because I also had Mildred Pierce as an honorable mention, but it was not for Anne Blythe. It was for Eve Arden. Honestly, you could have put Eve Arden in any movie and I'd say she should have had an Oscar. She's great in this movie, but I just want Eve Arden to have all the Oscars.
The only reason why I don't think Eve Arden necessarily should have won is because she did tend to play the same type of role. She could have gotten her Oscar for any role that she did because they were all equally great and sarcastic and perfect.
Samantha and I are just disagreeing all the time. Next week it'll be Drea and I.
We're all going to end up fighting each
other. It's very exciting. I super enjoy the being the person on the outskirts of the disagreement.
We have strong opinions.
Drea, what are your honorable mentions?
So I have a couple. One is real specific, but I think deserved. Jean-Luc Godard not only was never nominated for a directing Oscar, Breathless was not even nominated for foreign language.
What?
I know. I realize very much now that I'm saying them all, the theme of my things. Meet any film student now or any lover of film and you're familiar with an entire new dogma and system because of him, and almost specifically because of that movie. So that one was bonkers to me. I've also said bonkers 4,000 times, but that's kind of the sub-theme of what we're talking about. Another bonkers would be Cary Grant never got an Oscar, and I don't know how that is. I love Cary Grant. And
I really don't either.
I think the work that he does as an actor is that kind that's easy to overlook because his comfort in every setting is part of what he's doing, but there's a range of them. But he wasn't even nominated for Notorious, which I think he did such exceptional work. There's romance, there's suspense, there's a lot of things that he's doing. His Girl Friday, find me someone who can handle dialogue like that and make it sound everyday and like just casual guy who just happens to talk like that. Also, His Girl Friday was not nominated for Best Picture. Variations of a theme. I love that movie. And then my final special mention, again, is probably one that a lot of people would point out to this day, but Judy Garland lost Best Actress for A Star Is Born to Grace Kelly in The Country Girl.
I'm so glad. I was hoping someone would bring it up because I didn't want to be the one to bring it up because I always bring it up because this is literally the most egregious Oscar snub all freaking time. And I say that as somebody who did their due diligence. I've watched The Country Girl. It's a totally fine movie, but let's all call it what it is. Grace Kelly won for showing that she could be ugly. Judy Garland put her heart and freaking soul into that performance. And I think it's withstood the test of time far better than Grace Kelly with some mousy brown hair and glasses playing a drunk.
Also, I do love that our current day version of actresses going ugly is like Margot Robbie in Mary Queen of Scots or Charlize Theron in Monster. And yet we're going to be like, yes, Grace Kelly, so ugly in The Country Girl. Did you note her hair was almost brown?
I've had friendships end with people who have been like, well, I thought Grace Kelly deserved that Oscar. I've never talked to those people again.
Oh, no.
Good riddance, I say.
I'm just going to not say anything. I'm not going to say a word. Okay, well, here's the thing. Judy Garland's career was so long and so varied, and she turned in so many great performances and so many great movies. She should have won long, long before this, and then we wouldn't even be having this conversation. But Grace Kelly, she burned out like a candle, but she burned so bright and she was so great.
These are for specific performances. I know that they do often, especially in your supporting characters, or you get your Henry Fonda and On Golden Pond award that feel more like a culmination. Judy Garland in A Star Is Born, that performance is it's epic. What she's doing may involve a lot of the skills she's picked up over her career, but it is all combustible within one character, and it's enormous. I stand by it. I stand by my special mention.
I totally understand why people say it. It's the one that people continue to argue over for sure. This whole episode has made me so upset. So many people who needed Oscars. It's making me so
sad. So much injustice in the Oscar community.
Well, we can keep all these things in mind this year when we watch with a look of befuddlement.
You can let us know your thoughts on the Academy Awards, whether Judy Garland or Grace Kelly deserved it more. Which team are you on? Email your thoughts to us at ticklishbiz@gmail.com and we'll read them on the next episode. Of course, we're going to close this out by listing where you can get in touch with us. I'll let my fantastic co-host go first. Sam, where can fans find, get in touch with you online? What's going on with your site? All of that.
I am online. My blog is musingsofaclassicfilmaddict.com. And I'm also on Twitter at Classic Film Geek. I'm excited to announce that classicmoviehub.com has picked up the Cooking with the Stars column, and they're going to be publishing that every month on their site.
Congrats!
Awesome.
I know, thank you. It's really exciting. This is the first time I've ever had anybody pick up my writing, so it's wow.
Well, Drea, where can fans get in touch with you, find out all about your projects, all of that?
I am on Twitter at the Drea Clark and on Instagram at Drea Clark. And I am not super great about posting on either of them. You know, I'm sure that when I do, it's just gems, just absolute gems.
And you can get into touch with the podcast a variety of different ways. You can listen directly to Ticklish Business wherever podcasts are made available, directly at ticklishbusiness.podbean.com, Stitcher Radio, Player FM. We are on Spotify, and we're also on iTunes. If you're listening via iTunes, help the show out and leave us a rating and review. As always, you can contact the podcast directly at ticklishbiz, that's B-I-Z, @gmail.com. You can visit me at my official classic film website where I talk about films regularly, journeysofclassicfilm.com. And if you want to get in touch with the podcast via Twitter, we're at ticklish_biz. If you want to learn more about upcoming episodes, hear exclusive content before anyone else, and get merch. That's right, we have merch now. that's if you consider supporting Ticklish Business via Patreon. We have a ton of amazing perks. All your donations go straight back into the show. If you become a patron right now, just a dollar, you can get a Ticklish Business pin. I took one of Samantha Ellis's amazing logos and we made buttons for everybody. All the patrons are going to get a button, as well as, of course, Drea and Sam and me. And if you come to the TCM Classic Film Festival this year and you mention the show or you have a button, then you can get a special limited edition button that I made with a different logo. I just went button crazy. I will post a picture, actually, of the buttons and put it on Patreon, because I'm actually ridiculously proud of how they turned out. They look fantastic. And, of course, you can listen to my two bonus shows that I do with William Bibbiani, based on a true podcast, and Adam Kautzer and I do double features. I promise we're going to get episodes of those up soon. It's just scheduling's been kind of fickle lately. With TCM coming up, that's going to be where you can access all the TCM content that Samantha and I are going to be trying to capture for everybody. That's, once again, patreon.com/ticklishbiz. If you want to learn more about the stars turning 100 in 2019, we're not talking about it on the show this year, but if you're a member of TCM Backlot, you can read my year-long article series about the stars that are turning 100 in 2019. My article on Tim Holt should be going up soon. Next month is Jennifer Jones, so that should be a really fun article to write, and I'm excited to finally get to dive into her career. Next time, it is John Garfield's birthday. When I set out the schedule for this year, I said, hey, ladies, March, we're doing a John Garfield episode. So we have not 100% set a movie. I think we're going to do Postman Always Rings Twice. I was trying to think of something that had name recognition that would yield some juicy conversation. So if you're listening to this and you have a movie that stars John Garfield that you think would be worth us talking about, drop us a tweet or an email or something and we'll consider it. I'm actually pretty fluid. Like, literally, as long as he's in it, I will watch it and probably say it's amazing. I can't speak for the rest of you guys, but
I will probably react the same way. I think John Garfield's amazing and everything.
I'm gonna hold out. No, I'm just kidding. Of course I'll dig it.
Well, that will be next episode. So until next time.